It's Light the Tower, your daily look around the world of sports with Hall of Fame broadcaster and voice of the Texas Longhorns, Craig Way.
Say goodnight to this one!
And Horns 24/7 insider, Jeff Howe. On your live, local, and independent home for sports talk in Austin, The Horn.
Now, I know the Colonel was up and around this morning, so I don't know if he was in the plank position there, because he was on earlier this morning, sitting in with Bucky Godbolt. So, if you're back in the plank position, Colonel, I just gave you a couple extra seconds there, because I knew you were already up and about. It is indeed a ominous-looking morning. If you look outside, it's kind of pretty on one hand and kind of scary on the other. Scary, but we go forward anyway. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com. Viewable by those of you who care to take that risk. Speaking of scary, watching us on Twitch. But we're glad to have you with us, however you may be joining us this morning. My name is Craig Way. Glad to have you with us. Jeff Howe, my co-host, will be along momentarily. Meantime, we get you ready for the day. And what will the day bring? I'm looking outside, and you can see in the distance beautiful sunlit skies. That's in the background. In the foreground, dark, ominous-looking skies, portending perhaps an ugly day in terms of the storminess of the weather. And what we're hearing is it could be even worse tomorrow and Saturday. Coincidentally, you've got NCAA Regional Baseball going on tomorrow and Saturday here in the ATX, with the NCAA Austin Regional getting underway tomorrow. We're going to talk more about that. We'll kind of break that down, look at the teams, and then look at the NCAA tournament overall, because it begins at every regional site tomorrow. I've had a lot of people ask me, now, is this a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or a Saturday? It's all Friday through, if necessary, Monday at all 16 regional sites that have four teams in each. Next weekend, super regionals involve Friday through Sunday, Saturday through Monday, best two out of three. But it's all Friday through Monday, if necessary, the regional. So we just got somebody on the Specs text line, says, hey, it's pouring in Sunset Valley. I can almost throw a rock from here and land it in Sunset Valley. Not that I would throw rocks at Sunset Valley, of course. Lovely part of the greater Austin area. But my point is, it's just to the south of us, pretty close by. So, yeah, it's kind of scary out there and nasty. A guy who is neither scary nor nasty is our producer, our man behind the glass, the erstwhile major domo of all things Flex ATX and the Thursday Night Flex, Jonathan John Donaldson, J.J. Donaldson. We know him best as Snoop Daniel. How are you this morning?
I'm great. I wish it wasn't raining, because I wanted to see some baseball today and tomorrow. So we'll
okay,
see
if you just gave me an idea for bump back for the first break music. I wish it would rain there.
Oh, okay.
So you got that there. So, since you're hoping tonight, now give folks a little preview. We've got the Thursday Night Flex tonight, right?
Yeah, tonight. Well, more importantly, is Rouse versus Dripping Springs game one
at
the state quarterfinals for 5A.
Yeah,
at Concordia, if weather allows, it's tonight game one. But tonight on Flex, we do have Braylon James from Del Valle, who just got an offer from Texas. So, you know, not.
Yep.
Because we don't, like, do the whole, like, you know, like, wish you would go to Texas thing, because we love all schools and high schools.
You try to be universal.
Yes.
I understand that.
So, and but it was, we'll ask him what it was like to wait on Texas, because he got offers from everyone else first, Ohio State, LSU, Texas A&M, et cetera. So, it'll be fun tonight.
Are you going to be keeping folks updated on what's going on with Rouse and Drip?
Yes, for sure.
You got somebody out there tonight?
Aaron Anderson, I believe.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. So He's not. I think Reichel is running the game tonight. I don't know. I'm going to get behind the curtain
tomorrow.
Yes,
John Reichel. Yeah, he's our baseball guy. So you got, and Aaron Anderson did a splendid job running softball a lot and pitching in on baseball when we needed him, and women's basketball when we needed him. So yes, so that's good.
He's right. A good guy. I love Aaron.
All right,
so one of my best friends in life.
All right, so you got Double A out there tonight. Mm-hmm. Okay, all right, so that's good. So he'll keep you updated on Rouse. And Drippin, game one of the best of three series. It is best of three, right?
Is. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
I don't like one game series, man, because it really is like anything can happen. Because anything can happen. You just have a bad game.
Yeah.
You could be the best team on the planet and just have some like mental blurps and you lose.
You mean like Leander softball against Georgetown?
Oh, man, I you know what? Congratulations to Georgetown. Program first.
Yeah.
They've never been. For Leander, I got to say, it's a little disappointing because they were number one in the nation, so you really want to see that team at least make it to the state tournament. But they had a great season, and when you play a doubleheader in like 90-plus degree weather, you don't know how the kids are going to respond in that second game because you're in basically uncharted territory. You never practice like that.
Yeah.
Two games in a row.
So. Yeah, that's true. In high school football note, Jeff Holm, the head coach at Midway, is going back up to Mansfield to take the head coaching job at Legacy. He'd been at Midway since 16. He had been the head coach at Mansfield prior to Midway. He was 45-17 in Midway. They went 2-7 last season. And our friend David Smoke was tweeting that out about that. So Midway here in June is now without a head coach. Now they may do some promoting from within or whatever, but we'll find out about that. As I mentioned, my co-host is the pride of Northwest Williamson County and a proud graduate of Florence High School. I hesitated because I start to see the rain coming down now. And the former All District offensive lineman for the Florence Buffaloes. You know him best for his outstanding work at Horns 24/7. You don't know him best for wearing big headphones as he has put on in the studio this morning. That would be Jeff Howe.
Just now realizing I left my earbuds in the car, so I've got to go back out during the break in the rain.
Look at that.
And get them for the next segment. I've got my notebooks lined up, Craig. Our fun fact of the day for 93. We are 93 days away from kickoff. I'm excited to talk to Keith in hour number two about if we get to some.
That would be Keith Moreland, who we've lined up to join us. And hour number two is Keith will join us to preview all of the NCAA baseball regionals. He'll actually be working the regional that's going on in Fort Worth. He's not working the one at UFC Udish Fog Field. If you're wondering why, ask ESPN. They made the assignments. So Keith will be in Fort Worth to call to work with, I believe, Anish Sharaf calling the Fort Worth Regional hosted by the number 6 national seed TCU. So that'll be going on TCU against McNeese State, which could be a good little first game challenge for them. So anyway, we'll visit with Keith about that.
So I'm excited for all of that. I'm just a discombobulated mess this morning. This weather's got me all. Got my circuitry all out of whack, Craig.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll try to.
On top of the fact
get
that
you back
it took
on.
Me a little over an hour to get here this morning because apparently there was one of those cells that rolled south as I was leaving the house.
Yeah,
so.
You got slammed by it.
Ooh,
I mean, I'm looking at it right now. Somebody had texted right at the start on the Specs text line at 337-3776 and said, it's pouring in Sunset Valley.
That trek on 35 pretty much in Buda from 2001 all the way through Stastny.
That would be Farm to Market 2001, not the year he was talking about.
It was an adventure. No, 2001 wasn't a bad year, though. 20 years ago, not a bad year at all.
Yep, you're right.
I played in a playoff game in high school football in 2001, Craig.
I began doing play-by-play for University of Texas sports, all of the sports that were the major sports at that point in 2001, starting with the basketball 01-02 season after working Bill Schoening's final football season, the 01 football season, before he left to do the Spurs. So, yeah, 2001, not a bad year.
So, do you have anything you want to you want to get to, Craig, because there's something that I do want to go over.
Jump at it.
And I'll save our fun. If we get to the fun fact in this first segment, we get to it. If not, I'll save it for one of the two notebooks today, since we are 93 days from kickoff. But we talked about this yesterday, the Texas Sports Hall of Fame ballot. You talked about some of the names that were on it, just a couple of the Longhorns that were on it. But the Texas Sports Hall of Fame, they've released the entire ballot for the class of 2021. And I just want to go down some of the names tied to the University of Texas, and you just tell me kind of what your gut feeling is on likely to get in now or maybe waiting a while, and not to give away any kind of inside baseball talk from the meeting yesterday, but just your quick take on all these entrants. You ready, Craig?
While
I run it down for the public? Okay.
Sure.
You can go to the Texas Sports Hall of Fame's website and find all of these, find all the names on the ballot. By the way, Craig, how big are the induction classes usually on this deal?
Usually you have six of the primary ballot candidates, and then you have two on the veterans ballot.
Six primary, two veterans.
But they're having to do makeup for 2020 and 2021. Right. Okay. So it's they're going to have one banquet at the end of August and then another one in March.
Okay. So here it is for folks that are tied to the University of Texas who are on the ballot for the class of 2021.
Yeah.
Phil Dawson.
Mm-hmm.
Good candidacy, or could be waiting a little bit.
Well, he's been on the ballot for a bit.
And I guess that's more important to say, are they a first-timer on the ballot, or
right,
have they been on there before? So Phil Dawson's been on the ballot before.
Yes, he is. Okay. Yes, he has been. Uh-huh.
Cammy Etheridge for women's basketball.
Yes, also had come. And again, let me pull that up, because I do believe, well, she went on the ballot a couple of years ago.
Okay. Priest Holmes, deserving candidate.
Also a holdover.
Michael Huff.
A holdover as well.
National champion, first round pick, Thorpe Award winner, had an all pro season in the NFL. A guy who is in the Texas High School Football Hall of Fame. Craig, I don't know if he went in the same year as you, or
he did not.
That was different.
I nominated him a couple of years ago. So
we're talking about Derek Johnson, who's going to get in at some point.
Oh, Derek Johnson. Yeah, absolutely. Now, I did not nominate him, but I think Kirk Bowles was ahead of me in the line, and his name came up. So yes,
a guy we talked about yesterday. Colt McCoy is going to get in at some point.
Yep, that was somebody I nominated a couple of years ago.
Let's see. Krista Williams for softball.
She is also a holdover on that.
And that is going to be it for the primary ballot, the veterans ballot.
Which means you've been out of active participation as a player for at least 20 years. Boy, so it goes back to the aforementioned year of 2001.
Boy, this is one, and it just kind of shows you that some of these things get backlogged. We have this conversation with the College Football Hall of Fame all the time.
Sure.
Well, how was Johnny Lamb Jones not in?
Yeah. 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 And
from a football standpoint, from a track and field standpoint, obviously that you'd figure he would be in already.
Right. Yeah.
And then the other member, actually two, Annette Smith-Knight for women's basketball, and then our guest in the 11 o'clock hour is also on the veterans ballot.
Yep, Keith Bourne will be on the 2022. And looking at, they announced the 2022 primary ballot. This is the primary ballot in its entirety. Charles Austin, I think Cedric Golden nominated him for a track and field. Simone Biles, the Olympic gymnast, is on it. Chris Bosch, whom Trey Elling is going to be visiting with, I think, today. He's got a new book
out. He's got a book out, yep.
Tony Brackens is on the primary ballot for 2022. Scott Drew, head basketball coach at Baylor. Manu Ginobili is on it. Priest Holmes, we mentioned, is a carryover. Charmaine James, rodeo champion in barrel racing, is on. Remember, this is Texas Sports Hall of Fame. It crosses all the sports in the state of Texas, not just the major ones there. Jason Jennings, former outstanding pitcher for Baylor and in Major League. Toya Jones, the great track athlete as well, who played football at A&M. Clayton Kershaw is on that list. And what does that mean?
I love Clayton Kershaw.
Oh, okay. I thought you would.
No, I'll say ooh. It was a tired
one. Brooks Kiesnick is on the 2022 ballot. Von Miller Obviously, somebody made the remark yesterday in our nominating committee meeting that Von Miller could probably go in on what he did at DeSoto High alone,
yeah.
Let alone at A&M and then in the NFL. Tony Parker is on it. Carly Patterson, the outstanding Olympic gymnast. Matthew Stafford is on the list. Somebody brought up the point that maybe Matthew Stafford and Clayton Kershaw should go in together, like Troy Aikman and Emmitt Smith did, like where somewhere down the line it'll be Tim Duncan and Pop going in together, is the way that that's probably going to set up. Stacey Secor, the former outstanding volleyball player at Texas A&M. Wes Welker was a holdover from balloting a couple of years ago, and you mentioned Krista Williams. That's the primary for 2022. And then the veterans, including Bob Beamon, the Olympic long jump record holder, is from El Paso.
Wow. I honestly did not know that.
A lot of people said that when he first said, he's a holdover. I said, didn't know that. Was from El Paso.
That's another one you figure, yeah. Okay, if you can make the tie, how is he not in?
Yeah. Robert Brazil, a former outstanding player for the Houston Oilers. Lee Elder, first African-American to play in the Masters, was from Dallas. Lucius Jackson, now this is a really interesting story. A lot of people know as Luke Jackson played on the 76ers NBA championship team in 67, but he was an Olympic basketball gold medalist in 64. He was from the Beaumont area, began his collegiate career, I think, at a smaller school, might have been junior college, and he transferred to what is now UTRGV. It was Pan American University at the time, and they won an NAI national championship. Dave Marr won a major, and a great golf commentator, won a major, won a PGA championship. We mentioned Keith Moreland. Billy Nix, who I pointed out, really deserving of being in. Great football coach, won 6 Black College national championships when he coached Prairie View in the 50s and 60s. Nancine Perry, the former standout track athlete at the University of Texas, 2000 Olympian. Mike Renfro, the former wide receiver Houston Oilers, excelled at all 3 levels in this state in football, meaning high school at Arlington Heights, college at TCU, and then in the NFL with the Oilers, finished his career with the Cowboys. J.R. Richard, the former standout pitcher for the Astros. Johnny Rowland played on the Corpus Christi High School, Corpus Christi Miller team, the first integrated team to win a state championship in 1960. Doug Russell, a great Olympic swimmer who beat Mark Spitz at the 68 Olympics. It was a huge upset. Susie Snyder-Eppers, who played basketball at Baylor. Ira Terrell, former great basketball player at SMU. And Jimmy Wynn, the toy cannon, who played for the Houston Colts, the Houston Astros. And, of course, I remembered him as center fielder for the Dodgers as well. So that's the veterans ballot for 2022. Now, that ballot will go out to those who hold ballots. And like I said, I think it's around 1,000 or so people who have those. It's right. Kind of almost like the Heisman balloting. And that balloting will go out. Folks will vote throughout the summer. That class for 2022 will be announced in September for next spring's banquet. The one that the banquet that'll take place in at the end of August will be for 2020-2021.
Right.
So, yeah,
a lot of that rolls.
It's a crowded class.
A lot of that rolls. And then I think, you know, we talked about this a little bit yesterday, and I just think it's fascinating when you look at just the totality of the talent in across all sports that comes out of the state. Like I said, some of those names, like Bob Beamon. I didn't know Bob Beamon was from El Paso. You just don't really think about the totality of it. But I'm
a lot of people didn't know that Clint Dempsey, the great soccer star, was from Nacogdoches.
Yeah, but just reading this here, there are people that have already. You hinted on this. You mentioned this yesterday, and we've talked about this previously too. The class of I'm reading this from the Waco Tribune Herald. The class of 2022 could potentially include past Lone Star State sporting legends who have already been voted in but have yet to be inducted due to conflicts in their schedules. That group includes the likes of Michael Strahan, Dirk Nowitzki, and J.J. Watt.
Yeah.
Justin Leonard also in that group.
Yep, absolutely. And the hope is they think they're going to get Michael Strahan in, and there might even be a Good Morning America presence.
Nice.
At some point with all that. That might even be involved with that. So, like you said, there's a backlog.
I love my state, Craig. I love sports. Nice tie-in. Ties together.
Yeah. Very neat. I start saying with the Texas Sports Hall of Fame, yeah, you should be. And you haven't been by there in a while.
No. Like I said, it's been, what? So when did Charlie do that speaking tour? 7 years? It's been 7 years since I've been in that building. So, and you said it's changed even quite a bit since
yeah.
It had changed from, I'd been in there probably, I guess it had been about 4 or 5 years before then that I had been in there, and I saw a drastic change then. So I'm looking forward to getting back up there, checking it out.
I think it is expected, and this is going to take me to the next place I was going on this, down the road in the very near future, that we're probably going to see Dirk Nowitzki go in to the Hall. Which brings us to the Dallas Mavericks. Did you guys watch that last night?
They almost gave it away, but... ongoing.
That's how you look at it. They almost gave it away. Instead of the fact they won 3 games on the road in the series against Clippers.
And Luka looked great.
Yeah. 42 points. What do you have? 14 rebounds and 8 assists, I think, in the game. It was tremendous.
KP was mediocre again, except for the late three.
Yeah, it was huge. Mm-hmm. Huge.
How about Boban last night?
Yeah.
Giving them some quality minutes.
My favorite.
Well, see, and I think that was... part of what, when folks talk about Rick Carlisle being an outstanding coach, there are other people who go, well, give us a, you know, they want either won the one title, but give us some examples. I'll give you the example. The fact that he was able to go back and tweak his lineup to help his team defensively in the game last night, that was important, I thought.
It's fascinating to me. So this is the first series since a series that involved the two other Texas teams. You've got to go back to the 1995 Western Conference Finals to find the last time you had an NBA playoff series where through the first 5 games, the road team won every game.
Yeah. Yeah.
Neither of these teams have won on their home floor. And the only time the home team won in that series was when the Rockets closed it out at the Summit to go on to their second championship. They swept Orlando.
Yeah, absolutely. So that was 1995 last time. So it's been a while. The question is, can they now close it out at home?
I hope so.
I think that they probably feel that it's really going to be incumbent upon them to close it at home, because even though they've won 3 in a row on the road, how many times can you whistle past that graveyard?
It's been really weird to get the pulse of this from folks in Dallas, because after the first 2 games, it was...
oh, it'll be a sweep, five tops.
Ty Lue's no match for Rick Carlisle, and you know they've got this figured out, and this is a great team coming together at the right time. And then going into Game 5, it was Rick Carlisle's not long for this job, and maybe it's time for a change, and Porzingis is garbage, and... you know, maybe they should have made that trade, which that's a whole different can of worms. Like they had to for what the price ultimately was, it was worth the Porzingis trade was worth the gamble.
Yeah.
But at this point, I mean, and maybe it is time for a change with Rick Carlisle. He's been there a while, and you're getting to the point where just the day and age you are in the NBA, Craig, appeasing Luka Doncic, whatever he wants, is gonna kind of have to be the direction that organization goes, and if that future includes Rick Carlisle or not, they have to make that decision. But as of right now, to me, following the Mavericks, the key to me has always been, what are you getting off the bench? Like, can Jalen Brunson give you some quality minutes during those times where Luka has to rest? Getting what you got from Boban last night, nobody saw that coming. So it's all the pieces collectively working together. And I'm with you, Snoop, at this point. I mean, my expectations, the bar for me on Porzingis has just been, can he just not be bad? Can he just not be a detriment? I'm not asking for 20 and 10 every time out. Can he just not be a detriment to the cause overall? Because that thing is not, it's not going how, at one time, what the trajectory looked like.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going.
Injury
out.
Has a lot to do with that and the slow recovery there. And it was a clutch shot that he hit last night down the stretch, no doubt about it. Somebody said, Cooter said, who nominated Kershaw, Craig? Not me. It wasn't me. I'm glad he was nominated. Doesn't necessarily mean he's going to get in either. These are just nominations, and it goes to the voting body. In answer to your question, Cooter, was somebody from the Metroplex, I think, because they were talking about him being from Highland Park and, you know, so on and so forth. Can you imagine if Clayton Kershaw had not signed with the Dodgers and went to college?
He'd have gone to Texas A&M.
He'd have been an Aggie.
Yeah.
He was going to go to A&M. So, might have been a different route for Rob Childress.
Imagine what Friday nights at Bluebell Park would have looked like. Well, I guess it was technically Olsen Field at that point.
Then. Still was at the time, yeah.
Imagine what Fridays would have looked like, Craig, going into College Station.
Wow.
Probably not. Probably counting on it being a, well, at least it'd be a quick night.
And I sit there and I, you know, somebody said, wow, what do you imagine if you called a game with him pitching? Hey, I did one in Columbia, Missouri with Max Scherzer on the mound for the Missouri Tigers. You know, so I saw some really good pitchers through the years who have excelled at the big league level, and some who just barely made it to the big league level. Jabba Chamberlain was a great college pitcher.
There were some of those Taylor Youngman starts where you're looking at your watch in the third inning, like, we're gonna be out of here in about 2 hours, 2:15. It's gonna be a nice quick Friday night.
Yeah, exactly. So anyway, all right. Well, I know you're just messing with me, Cooter. That's okay. Feel free to mess with me. Up next, we'll have the first of Jeff's two Longhorn notebooks. We do have Inconceivable coming up later on this hour. I'm so sorry I missed out on the Feral Hogs yesterday.
It's all right. Anytime anybody sends us a Feral Hog story, we're reading it.
Yeah.
So bring your Feral Hog submissions are welcomed.
Absolutely. All right, so we'll have our Inconceivable segment coming up. Keith Moreland joins us in the 11 o'clock hour. This is Light the Tower on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at hornfm.com.
Sunshine, blue skies, please go away. A girl has found another and gone away. With her went my future. My life is filled with gloom. So day after day, I stay locked up in my room. I know to you, it might sound strange, but I wish it would rain.
Well, the Temptations would get their wish here. He's got plenty of rain rolling down. Enough to keep Jeff Howe from going out to his car to retrieve his earbuds.
Not worth it.
Well,
not worth it going out in the monsoon. If I've got to do that, I'm only doing it once, and that's to go home today.
Okay. All right. So Jeff was unable to do that, but what he is able to do is bring you the notebook.
Jeff Howe's Longhorn Notebook, brought to you by Cedar Park Overhead Tours. Go to cptours.com.
You know, not an app guy says, I think Jeff has EBD, earbud dysfunction.
Well, I deal with a lot of dysfunction in my life. But, you know, the thing about the big headphones, they make my ears sweat.
Yeah.
As strange as that sounds. And, you know, Craig, when you're fat, you sweat in places most people don't. So maybe that's just part of the deal.
Could be.
The ear sweat just really bothers me.
Okay.
That tickle you back there, Snoop?
He did.
I heard a chuckle from behind the glass.
The thin man was
no,
tickled back
no,
there.
No.
Just looking up watching Mike Krzyzewski's retirement press conference.
Yeah.
That's going on right now. You know, Craig, I was coming into my, I promise I'll get to a little Longhorn football here in just a second, but I was coming into my sports consciousness right around the time his Duke teams really started their run in the early 90s. I don't know if it's nostalgia has the best of me, and I just remember it fondly back then. I still say of all his Duke teams, he's had 5 national championship teams, but in 12 Final Fours. The 92 Duke team, I think, still is probably his best team.
The 92 one?
Yes.
Yeah, that beat the Fab Five.
Beat the Fab Five.
Starting lineup.
Went wire-to-wire number one, had that just historic, regional final against Kentucky at the Spectrum where Christian Laettner hit the shot. To me, that's his best team.
And it took all of that, all it to overcome that Kentucky team, the Unforgettables, I guess they were called.
Do you want me to rattle up the starting lineup for that team?
Please.
The Kentucky one or the Duke one?
The Duke, I believe it was, if I'm remembering right.
Okay.
Bobby Hurley,
yeah.
Brian Davis,
yeah.
Thomas Hill,
yeah.
Grant Hill,
yeah.
Christian Laettner.
Nice.
Well done.
Nice.
Was that it, Snoop?
Yeah. Antonio Lang, I think.
Off the bench.
Antonio Lang. Cherokee Parks was on that team also.
Yeah.
Off the bench.
So, yeah.
Yeah. It's a great Duke team. Let's talk about Texas football.
Sure.
And we'll the year 1992, we'll talk the number 93, but the year 1992 is relevant for what I want to talk about today. Kind of an evergreen topic we can have on this show is really up until we get to September 3rd, because once Toe meets Pigskin on September 4th, the proof will be in the pudding. But expectations for Steve Sarkisian, and kind of where should the bar be set, and what should Longhorn fans be expecting? Craig, I am today. What is today's date? Today is the June 3rd?
June the 3rd, yes.
I'm going to give Longhorn fans where I think, I'm going to go ahead and just establish where I think the bar is for Steve Sarkisian in year one. And I'm not doing this just looking at, you know, preseason top 25s or projected win totals or Vegas lines or any of that stuff.
This is just your unvarnished, well, yet informed opinion on where you think this program, like you said, should be this fall.
But you know how I roll, Craig. I like to take a historical look at things. So I just look at, you know, what history tells us about first-year Texas coaches. And you can tell, you can usually tell a lot how a tenure is going to go if you look back to the first year.
Whether, spoiler alert, I heard this on the Blitz podcast the other night, and it's really good.
Whether it be good or bad, there are signs that you can tell how things are going to go,
okay,
in a coach's first year. And I'm basically looking at really starting with Daryl Royal taking over for Ed Price.
After 1957.
After the 1956 season going into
In
57.
Fairness to Coach Royal, there was nowhere to go but up. They went 1-9 in 56.
Very true. But in 57, Coach Royal takes the job. They win six games and end up going to the Sugar Bowl, and they're plus +5 in win total. So you improve the win total by 5 in your first year. Now we know Coach Royal's last year. It's amazing the difference a healthy Earl Campbell can make for your ball club, because Coach Royal's last year in 76, they go 5-5-1. Fred Akers gets a healthy Earl Campbell. They make the switch to the I formation. They have an undefeated regular season, go into the Cotton Bowl against Notre Dame, ranked number one in the country, with the Heisman winner. And for a lot of Longhorn fans, that's a pretty forgettable day what happened. But still, you're plus +6 in terms of win total from where you were in 76 to where you were in 77. And we know the dip it took under Coach Akers toward the end. It was a 5-6 season in 86 that cost him his job. David McWilliams takes over for 87. You end up going to the Blue Bonnet Bowl. You end up going 7-5. You go to the Blue Bonnet Bowl. So you're plus +2 in terms of wins from the coach you fired to the coach you hired. Let's go to John Makovic. David McWilliams, they have the Shock the Nation season. It's a 10-win season, a conference championship season, and maybe that loss to Miami just started a really, really bad, just unsavory 1991. And what's interesting, Craig, if you look at that 91 season, I went back and looked at it a couple summers ago because my interest was piqued. It's a tale of just two different football teams. The defensive numbers from 91 still hold up as some of the best single-season defensive numbers we've ever seen in the history of this program.
Great defense from Leon Fuller.
Likewise, the offensive numbers from the 91 season still hold up as some of the worst offensive numbers we've seen in a single season in program history.
Plummeted.
Yeah, it's amazing just to look at the stark differences between those two sides of the ball. So a 5-6 season, David McWilliams is out. John Makovic comes in for the 92 season, his first season. Texas goes 6-5. So you're only plus +1, but you are one win better than you were the year before.
And had the proliferation of bowl games that exist today existed back then, they would have been in a bowl game at 6-5. You're saying 6-5 going to a bowl game. They would have been in at 6-5. They didn't have nearly as many bowl games. That's why they didn't go in 92. 93, they could have technically, I guess, qualified at 500, but did not go when they went 5-5-1 the next year.
And we've seen, Craig, in today's college football, there is a place for a 500 Texas club in a bowl game for TV and ticket sales.
It's happened.
Everything that bowl games would want makes Texas an attractive option. So let's go to 1997, Craig. You have 4-7, and you know the defensive coordinator search was what it was. You end up with Bobby Jack Wright putting Aaron Humphrey at middle linebacker, and you go from saying Cade McNown is a dead man to, and I'm sure that's something Aaron Humphrey probably regrets at this point. But nonetheless, you know, the UCLA game happens. You go 4-7. Baylor's tearing down the goalpost. John Makovic is fired after the season. Mack Brown comes in 1998, and you go from just a 4-7 disaster to 9-3. And you're saying, well, 9-3, okay, where is that standard? But let's look at Mack's loss. This is where I say you can tell a lot about a coach in his first year. Just based on, not all losses are created equal, as we know, but based on the good and bad, let's look at Mack's three losses. All right, we talked last week about a Texas coach through their first three games, how that can usually set the table too. Look at the two teams Mack lost to in those first three. Now, he had a 1-2 start, but you go on the road and you lose to UCLA at the Rose Bowl. And Craig, I can't, it's impossible for me to tell like a college age person right now how good UCLA was under Bob Toledo in the mid to late 90s.
Well, 98, what, they had that Saturday game against Miami with national championship that, implications on the line?
That loss at the Orange Bowl, a game that had to be rescheduled. There was a hurricane. They were supposed to play in September. Hurricane comes through South Florida as it can in early September. Game gets pushed back to, it was either Thanksgiving week or the week after, and UCLA ends up losing the game. It cost them a shot at a national championship.
Didn't Edgerrin James have a monster game?
It felt
that
like
day?
He ran for 400 yards that day. I think it was like 150, but it felt like 400. Yeah, Edgerrin James had a monster game against Cade McNown and that UCLA team. That they were, I mean, they were the dominant program in Los Angeles at the time. UCLA, mm-hmm. USC was kind of down, coming off of John Robinson's second ride, and
still trying to find their way with Paul Hackett.
That whole Paul Hackett tenure, yeah, that just never, nothing ever really clicked. And yeah. It was UCLA. They were competing for Pac-10 titles and going to Rose Bowls and having Heisman finalists and first-round draft picks. So UCLA was where it was at the time. And the second loss in those first three for Mac was on the road against Kansas State, a Kansas State team that, by the way, in the way that, UCLA lost, helped K-State because at that point, K-State was an overtime loss to Texas A&M away from playing for a national championship.
Yeah.
Had they beat Texas A&M, had Sir Parker not
Sir
put
Parker.
That touchdown, Kansas State would have been playing for a national championship. So those were two really good teams. And Mac's third loss that year, it was to Lubbock. It was to Texas Tech in Lubbock at night. And not to say that Texas fans will forgive a road loss to Texas Tech, but there's an understanding that when you go to Lubbock and you play at night, weird stuff can happen.
Yeah.
So if you're going to have a three-loss season as a first-year Texas head coach, Mack Brown kind of set the table on what that three-loss season needs to look like. You need to be losing to really good teams and show a good trajectory. And, oh, by the way, having a Heisman winner at running back helps. I'll skip Charlie Strong real quick. So we'll go from Tom Herman to Charlie Strong because that's the coaching transition that's freshest on everybody's mind. We know about the 5-7 season. In 2016, Tom Herman comes back. They go 7-6. They're 6-6 in the regular season. Beat Missouri in the Texas Bowl. You get to 7 wins, so you're plus 2 in terms of win total. The only coach, Craig, that has been hired at Texas since Darryl Royal took over for Ed Price to not improve the win total from the previous year to his first year is Charlie Strong. Mm-hmm. You were two games fewer in the win column going from 13 to 14. So
from 8 wins to 6 wins.
So what does all that mean? Why am I saying all this? When you look at history, every new Texas head coach, Darryl Royal, Fred Akers, David McWilliams, John Makovic, Mack Brown, Tom Herman, 6 of the 7 coaches that have been hired since Ed Price was fired have all improved the win total by at least one game in their first year, Charlie Strong being the exception. So my bar for Steve Sarkisian, it might sound low, it might sound like I'm giving Sark a pass, but whatever. It's my bar. You set yours. I'll set mine. Can Sark get this team to 8 wins? You're 7-3 last year. Can you get to 8 wins?
Because that's the step forward.
Which in my mind is an 8-4 regular season, get a chance to go get a 9th in a bowl game.
I understand that. I think it's also fair to say, didn't say, because life is not fair.
Right.
And last year, life was not fair in a lot of ways to Texas, but it was unfair to a lot of programs. The Kansas game was canceled.
True.
I think it's pretty safe to say probably what would have happened had they gone to Kansas. They would have won that game 8. Then if you win the bowl game, it's 9 at that point, like it was the year before. But
in a season where, and this kind of goes back to something else, too, we talked about on the Blitz. Sark hasn't said anything yet, Craig, where he's backed himself into a corner. And if you go back to this time last year, even though we were dealing with no spring ball and the regular season was uncertain, all the interviews Tom Herman was doing, whether he meant to or not, he backed himself into a corner by saying everybody internally inside the building, 2020 was the year that they had circled. And to be the year that, with Sam Ellinger is now basically a 4-year starter, and that 2018 recruiting class, those guys are going to be 3rd-year guys, and if you developed it right, you were going to, everything was going to be there for Texas to go compete for a national championship. So with Tom Herman's words, that's where the bar was set. And regardless of what the win total was, the failure to reach that bar, we're not talking about external expectations, we're talking about internal expectations that were stated publicly. The failure to reach that bar, regardless of what the win total is, anything short of at the very least playing for a conference championship, if not winning it, was just going to be unacceptable, and it was.
Yeah, turn to that. And by the way, here's an interesting couple of texts from a guy. Says, loser talk, and then says, you are part of the problem. Okay, so give us a little illumination as to what exactly you mean. I promise Jeff won't get mad at you.
In what way am I part of the problem?
I don't know if he means you, or you, us, or you, everybody.
Like the royal you.
Yeah, that sort of thing. That's okay. Give us a little more illumination as to, because it's an interesting perspective when you say you are part of the problem there. You got it in a capital U. Does that mean the U, like Miami? No, probably not.
I'm guessing no.
No, give us a little more illumination. I'm curious about that. Nobody's going to get mad. It won't be. Nobody will take it personally or get butthurt or anything like
Look,
that.
Look, Jeff
is just laying out what he thinks that the bar should be for Texas, and he's saying 8 wins.
I
don't think that's unreasonable.
No, I'm doing this, Craig, because, you know, to expect history tells you, like, unless Bijan Robinson is a legitimate Heisman candidate and is in New York at the end of the year, you're probably not winning 10 or 11 games. History tells you that.
Too difficult to turn it around that quickly, that dramatically.
The three biggest turnarounds we've seen for first-year Texas head coaches, really post-World War II, Darryl Royal, which, as you said, you had nowhere to go but up. They were 1-9 the year before.
Right.
You had Fred Akers with a healthy Earl Campbell go +6 in the win column. And then we just talked about Mac's first year where, yeah, you inherit a Heisman winner. It helps. And a guy who left the program as college football's all-time leading rusher. It helps when you've got that kind of guy.
Yeah, there you go. All right, we'll get back to more of that coming up. We do have our inconceivable moment. We have the bonus today of Jeff's harbinger of what's to come in our future.
Yes.
And mine as well. So we'll get to that coming up when we continue with Light the Tower. Here on the Horn, 104.9, 101.9, AM 1260. We're live, local, and digital on the Horn app and at HornFM.
Housing Lender. Light the Tower.
Inconceivable. 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 Inconceivable.
You keep using that word. I don't think it means what you think it means.
Inconceivable means that it is brought to you by our good friend Dr. Matthew J. Crawford and his outstanding staff at Austin Orthopedics, who specialize in the prevention and treatment of sports-related injuries. Check them out on the web at austin-orthopedics.com. Okay, now I said that, you know, if you've listened to this program, to this segment, you know where Jeff leans and where I lean with regard to future apocalyptic events on this planet. I think that the animal kingdom of the world is going to rise up and revolt against mankind. Jeff sees the robot wars coming.
It's happening.
You're convinced of it.
Yeah.
You and BK, right?
Trey Elling also on board with the robot war. I'm more in line with Trey. Trey and I are married. We have families to look after. BK is the kind of person that can make the great sacrifice and, you know, shack up, if you will, with
an android?
With a sex bot and kind of get in good with them that way. Trey and I are just, I think, taking the approach of let's prop up the robots, make them feel like we understand your power, you know, how you can take this thing over, and we're just going to get on the good side of the robots.
Okay.
While everybody else is running around freaking out,
you'll let the robots enslave you.
Pretty much, yeah. Okay. But hopefully I'll be like, I don't know, I'll be pretty high up in the pecking order, if you will.
Toward that end.
So this was sent to us a couple of days ago. And I had no idea this existed. This first surface, I guess they released the prototype of this in 2018, and they've slowly been
developing
on it.
Yeah.
The they is MIT, and it is a robot called Cheetah 3 that can leap and gallop across rough terrain, climb a staircase littered with debris, and quickly recover its balance when suddenly yanked or shoved, all while essentially blind. The 90-pound mechanical beast, it's about the size of a full-grown Labrador, is intentionally designed to do all of this without relying on cameras or any external environmental sensors. Instead, it nimbly, quote-unquote, feels its way through its surroundings in a way that engineers describe as, quote, blind locomotion, much like making one's way across a pitch-black room. So these are robots, Craig, that are picking up human senses.
Yeah.
Yeah. We're screwed.
Okay. All right.
We are so incredibly screwed.
Okay. I've got a couple things related to the animal kingdom. First of all, a giant skull has washed ashore in New Jersey. Now, that story by itself isn't really that surprising. Skulls washing ashore in New Jersey, especially on the southern edge about 75 miles east from Philly, that's not a surprise, okay? Human body parts and things like that. But this is not a human part. This is a giant skull picked clean of all flesh found 2 days ago at Island Beach State Park. It has, they're wondering, you know, what it is. It had these giant jaws that basically amounted to something like tweezers. So it says, you never know what you're going to find on the beach after a storm. Our state park police found this skull yesterday. The park staff did not give dimensions of the skull, but a photo of it showed it stood waist high alongside an officer, and it was a couple of feet wide. Now, many of the folks have guessed it's some kind of a whale. Others, they think it may have been picked apart by hungry sharks. They wondered if it was a giant tooth, however, from one beast instead of, at that point, instead of just like one thing. A few pointed out that it resembled the skull of a pterodactyl, the prehistoric flying reptile. Vacationers were horrified by it when they saw it floating by. So what they're wondering is, so what could have been big enough to kill it if that were the case? All right? All right, so that's one issue here. Then comes this story sent to us from our producer on the Longhorn Radio Network from Learfield IMG College, our football broadcast. Bill Harwell sends this in. Dateline, Tottenham, Australia. It starts off with the words, the stench hits you at first, pungent, musty, and rotting. Then you hear them, a sound like ocean waves or pouring rain hitting the concrete and the occasional squeak. The horror lurking in the darkness, throngs of thousands of mice swarming throughout Australia right now. A plague of mice overrunning farms, shops, and bedrooms right now.
Just thousands of mice?
Yeah. Just one of thousands of farms with what local residents are calling the worst mouse plague in living memory, with far-reaching consequences both in the fields and in the rural communities.
Yeah.
For what has been a half year, but many felt like an eternity, the rodents have chewed a swath through southern Queensland, New South Wales, and northern Victoria, the flip side of the good fortune of the break of a once-in-a-century drought. They had a break in the drought, but now the mice have arrived. In addition to devouring crops, they've bitten people in their beds, they've dropped out of air conditioning units, and they've gnawed through appliances. They've eaten the toes off chickens in their pens. They've been blamed as whole towns have lost phone reception, and a house has burned down because of mice.